Hello and welcome to Differential Discussions. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Dave.
And today we're back to talk about podcasty type stuff. And we're going to focus on Train the Trainer.
I think this is a good normally we'd have guests and stuff, but geez, we are kind of the guests. We are the content specialists in this area, especially Melissa. So Train the Trainer. How would you describe it in a nutshell, maybe to someone on the outside, what that concept is?
Yeah, so I think train the trainer is essentially making sure that your trainers are prepared to train whomever they're training. So if you're thinking in the clinical setting, you're working in the lab, who is that person training? Well, they may be training students. They're definitely training new employees. And then they could have the potential to also train medical interns, medical students, medical residents, fellows. So a lot of different people. And if you make sure that your trainers at the bench are prepared to train any of those, right? It's a different audience, so you have to know what your audience is and what you're training. But if your laboratory scientists are prepared and they know exactly the material that they're supposed to be teaching, they're sure, it's easier for them to teach that material. So train the trainer is making sure that your trainers are adequately prepared to train.
I think what I've experienced in laboratories over the years is varying levels of expertise and dare I say competency. Geez, I don't really want to go there because in an ideal situation, every lab you go into has a baseline level of competency and standard of care. But I think we can all see that there's variability there, right? Where we came from, especially during the time frame where we came from, right? So the place and a point in time, there was a ton of expertise. I mean, so much so that like it's kind of a snowball effect. So when the trainer is well experienced, when the trainer is knowledgeable, when the trainer is able to communicate well, then it grows the laboratory expertise almost exponentially, right? As you get new techs that come in, they're able to rise up to their full potential, right? So like this is a huge, I think, challenge
Yeah.
for labs right now too,
Well,
especially
and
after.
definitely, and just thinking about where we came from when I first started, which was a few years before you, but when I started, it was literally everybody on the shift except for me was over 40. And so everyone had a really solid expertise, and it's not like they were over 40 and they just came and did their job. It was like they were there and they loved it and they were passionate and they were really were the subject matter experts of their respective locations. And we came from a hematology lab. So when we're talking about the subject matter experts, I mean like this person was an expert in looking at morphology, white cell, red cell, all of that. And then this person was an expert at looking at pediatric morphologies, which is different than adult morphologies. And this person was an expert in coagulation. And this like so each person was literally a subject matter expert of like a teeny weeny sliver of hematology, which is maybe we could say like a quarter of the medical lab. So really thinking about subject matter experts, like that's what we're talking about. And do you have to be a subject matter expert in order to ensure that your trainers are adequately prepared? No. Because in the time from when I started to, I don't know, maybe 5 years later, we lost a lot of those subject matter experts. And so, how do you keep that same level of expertise or some semblance of expertise? And how do you make sure that the people you have now are adequately prepared to do the training that your subject matter experts were doing?
That's so any managers or directors that stumble on this video, they're gonna struggle with this exact point. I don't know, I could tell people how to run businesses, right? But I think it's clear that a lot of value that employees might have is probably not in line, in a way that retains high level talent, and that's unfortunate. And I recognize that to a lot of managers and directors, they really don't have a lot of control over that. That's a challenge. That's tough. This is kind of an aside and a little bit off topic, but geez, if you can find ways to make those people, right, those subject matter experts' lives better, geez, you should do it.
If you,
You
yeah, anything you're able to
know what
do,
I mean?
definitely,
Yeah, like whatever lever you have available to pull, and some of it might sound a little bit extreme, but if someone is that talented, right, you need to understand that they're going to become a font, a wellspring of knowledge and expertise to the rest of the employees and new hires that you get, right? So losing that is going to be really tough. So like if you have like a super tech and they don't want to work weekends anymore, I know that might be a tough political thing to struggle with, but like geez. Anyway, I'm deviating like far from the topic here, but like retaining those special people, yeah, I don't know what else to say, because once that's gone, it is tough to get back, right? If you have that person with 15, 20 years of high level, they're not a button pusher, right? High level experience, they can distill down that 15, 20 years to new hires to where you get like, just to put a number on it, you can get 50 to 70% of the value of that person in low level brand new employees. And geez, that's like tremendous value, So it's tough because I think we're intermingling like that business side of things with the science side. And as someone who's got a little bit of both, I really do think that a lot of more business focused people make short-sighted decisions here, and they're not correctly allocating a value to what expertise really will mean long term to a lab. So you got to try to keep those people, whatever you can do, because we kind of saw what happened, right? Like, so what happened, Melissa, after that retention of those people fails, right?
Yeah, then you're going to struggle with getting in scientists, laboratory scientists. You can hire anybody, but who's going to adequately train them? Who's going to prepare them? And when you lose that subject matter expert and all that experience, who's going to take that position over? And if you lose all of your really experienced techs, then you have basically newer laboratory scientists stepping into the roles, and now you don't have that experience, you don't have that expertise, and so the lab will struggle a little bit. And that's exactly what happened to where we came from.
Yeah, it's really sad to see, to be frank, but yeah, so it's a cascading effect. It's
Right.
so it's I sympathize with the people managing most of the people managing laboratory departments and in greater laboratory operations, because that's a challenge, right? But I think so at a baseline, these trainers, they need to have this these special skill sets. And then what makes it even more difficult to find these people is that they also have to be good trainers. So like I think labs need to be prepared to grow people and to like learn how to train. Because like teaching isn't intuitive to everybody, right?
And in part, that's what we're going to talk about here.
Yeah, definitely, right? So, as a base, I think the candidate to be a trainer should have good communication skills, right? So they're able to articulate in spoken word, written word. That'll become somewhat important too, I think. And then good to listen. So when I think about good communication skills, all too often listening isn't kind of factored in. A good trainer will hear an individual's questions and know where to kind of address like concept issues, right? A question can like speak volumes about one's understanding.
Well, and
So.
sometimes someone's asking you a question, but they're really asking you this question.
And you've taught me that, right? Like, so this is a really funny lesson where as a teacher learning from a teacher, the subtext, yeah, continue, sorry, I cut you off there.
No, that's fine. But that's a big thing. And not only students, but any trainee that you're training is going to have the same thing where they're going to ask you a question. You kind of have to be able to read into it and say, oh, okay, you're asking me this. But you're really asking me this, so I'm gonna answer this question because I know that's what you're asking me.
And so a trainer is kind of like a constellation of all these things.
A trainer is a teacher in a way.
Yeah,
You're not
absolutely.
teaching in a classroom or on Zoom or online, but you're in front of somebody and you're training them, you're teaching them how to do something. So a lot of the same skills are necessary. Now, do you need to know how to grade and all of that? No, not really, but like you need to know how, excuse me, to show somebody how to do something. You need to know how to explain it for them to do. And then hopefully they'll, because we're laboratory, and so we're really kinesthetic or hands-on learners. So you'll be able to show them and they can mimic you. But you really want to be able to explain it and talk with them about it. You also want to have that understanding of what you're sharing with them. And a lot of the laboratorians working at the bench will be like, well, I don't remember the coagulation cascade, but that's okay. You don't need to have the coagulation cascade, but if you're showing them how to use a coag analyzer, you should know how does the analyzer work. Well, let's open this up, let's do some maintenance, let's look at this, let's look at the optical reading units or whatever the mechanical mechanism is. Like they should have an understanding of this is an optical density instrument, this is how it measures this, the methodologies. So the trainers don't necessarily have to have the didactic, the theory of the theory you learn in school, but they should have the understanding of the instruments and that sort of thing. And if they don't, you train them. You train
Invest.
the trainers.
Yeah, invest. It's tough to like take people off the bench and send them to, but th this is you, it's the way that this works, frankly. You need to build that and cultivate it. That's the most challenging part.
So I think to kind of showcase, we can talk a little bit about when I did train the trainer where we came from.
Sure.
So essentially, I made a train the trainer PowerPoint and I presented it to a bunch of the laboratorians working in the lab. Now, I did this presentation with anyone who could come. So all of the managers of all of the different departments, heme, chem, micro, blood bank, everybody, they would send their folks to come and listen to this presentation. So it was basically a presentation talking about training, talking about what are learning styles, because knowing and understanding the different learning styles is helpful, because typically if you have a learning style, it's going to be similar to your teaching style. And that's great, but understanding that students have other learning styles from your major one, and then how to adequately use that and how to adequately teach other learning styles so that you're really able to get a multitude of learners. Because in the lab, most learners are going to be similar, but we are all different people. So we will have those different learners as well. And it's important that we can get to each of them. So understanding that. The other thing is where we came from, we were a large teaching institution. So we taught MLT students, we taught MLS students, interns, residents, fellows, everybody. So I also kind of spent some time going over what's important to teach at the MLT level on the bench versus the MLS level on the bench. And so I spent time going over that versus if you're training a new employee, what do you need to go over? Because, we had extra quizzes and, things that students could work on during downtime, or if we got really busy and we had to push them off to the side. Are you going to do that with a new employee? No, because that's a different learning outcome that you're trying to target with an employee versus with a student, versus with medical students versus, interns and the different residents. So it just depended on the audience. So I spent time going over that as well. And so all of that's important for them to know. And then, you know, we did a learning style inventory. Everybody learned what their learning style was. So there was some hands-on component. It was nice. It was like an hour and a half total. And I did that presentation several times so that I could get a lot of the people in the laboratory who did training. So training was mostly done on day shift where I worked. So I mostly spent time with the day shift or like the mid shift people who came in at like 12:30, you know, that sort of time frame. So I spent a lot of time with everybody from the different labs, but I worked in hematology, and when I was there, I was a senior tech in charge of education and training. And so making sure that everybody's prepared and having that, you know, learning styles inventory and all that, that's great. That's supplemental. The bare minimum, you make sure you have checklists for every department. You make sure you have descriptors so that everybody knows what the checklists are. You've gone over all of the checklists with the trainers so that they're sure when the checklist says maintenance, they know exactly what they're covering for maintenance. For the checklist, be it a student, because a student learning maintenance is going to be very different than a, you know, your scientist that you've just hired to learn maintenance. So it's going to vary depending on who your target is and making sure that your trainers know the checklist. Now, and that's like a bare minimum, making sure you have the checklist and everybody understands them.
And there's
So,
just so many ways to formulate the checklist too, right? I
yes.
love how you said maintenance and kind of paused on that because what, there's dailies, maybe there's a weekly, maybe there's a monthly. So, you know, sometimes it might be wise to have that expanded on, right? And
Yes.
individualized. So, yeah, it's.
Well, especially depending on the training, because what if your weekly and monthly maintenance is done on third shift? Do you need to train the day shift?
Right. Yeah.
So it also depends on what shift the employee was hired for, versus when you have a student, you can be like, oh, hey, we're going to go over maintenance. So this is some of the daily, this is weekly and monthly, but we're not going to do any of it because you're a student. We're just going to say there is, you have to do it and check, check, check kind of thing. So different audiences.
So that's an interesting thing to touch on too, is that not everybody, not all the trainees need to learn every single thing, right? So having and that kind of feeds into the system and how well organized it is. Building that, taking your time with all that stuff is will pay dividends later, definitely.
Well, and making sure you have it for every bench. So you have to have the training completely outlaid, completely outlined, so that everybody knows the expectation is there. So the trainee knows what they're going to be going through. The trainer knows exactly what to cover, and maybe not when, but in what order. So that they understand that you're going to go and work through, maybe you're going to teach them how to load the instrument, how to, you know, take the specimens, where they should go in the instrument, what reagents to load in the instrument, that step before you get to, okay, now here's the interpretation, what are you going to do with it? So just kind of understanding where, like, how should I train them? What's the order I should train them in? How in depth do I need to go in theory? One of the really nice things to do with your trainers is to literally sit down with your trainer and say, okay, train me. I've done this a few times, and so the people I've done it with have come out as some of the best trainers. I did that with Victoria, and she was absolutely fantastic at training. And I would sit down and I would say, okay, train me. Pretend I'm a student. What are you gonna tell me? How are you gonna train me on this? Versus I'm an employee, now tell me. And if you can sit down with your trainers and really, okay, teach me. And you don't have to do it on every single bench. If you do it on one bench, the trainer gets the idea of how much theory, how much methodology, how much information you should share with your trainees, your students, your employees, all of that. If you do that once with them, they get it.
It's just teaching them how to teach, like in a sense.
That's it.
It's
Train
great.
the trainer, teach the teachers. You're teaching the folks who are going to be doing the training. And yes, giving them, here's your checklist, like making sure that they have the materials. That's bare minimum. Here's a checklist. You need to have that. This is what you're going to go over. Giving them like the structured environment, like I did with the actual training and going over, this is how you train an MLT versus an MLS versus an employee, that sort of thing. That's even better. But literally, like gold star, sit down with your trainers and say, train me. And it doesn't have to be, it can be an hour. It could be something short, but the point is to get your trainer thinking, how am I going to train this person? And then they can explain it to you. Because really, to teach is to learn twice. So you really need to take what you've learned, digest it, and regurgitate it. And so they need to figure that out. And if you can be that sounding board for them, then that's really helpful. Because by the time they get to having their student trainee or their employee trainee, then they have a really good idea of, okay, this is the material I'm going to share with you. And they have more confidence because they've already done it with you. And honestly, a lot of times that's more intimidating than doing it with
I
their
did.
trainee.
So I was about to say that can be one of the tough parts about it too, is that you don't want it to ever be framed in a way where they feel like they're being graded, right? So I think in a setting like this with professionals, you want to do everything you can from the way you approach the meeting and the back and forth, so that it's not like they feel free to make mistakes, to like to mess up, and that's okay, right? I like to say that I am not afraid of micro failure. I'm more afraid of like big, like obviously big failures, but small failures, like the people need to be empowered to flub and like say something wrong, or you know what I mean, and become corrected, and like that's okay. Like that's totally, you know, part of the process. So yeah, how you approach the trainer, make it a safe environment. Not to, I know that word's kind of like thrown around a lot, but it means a lot, you know.
Yeah, it's really, it should be coming from a place of growth. We want you to
Yes.
grow as a trainer. We want you to be effective. We want you to be the best trainer that you can be. I mean, think about, eventually I want you to be able to take over my position and then you train
Right.
everybody how to do the trainers kind of thing. So if you really frame it in an educational perspective, then it's usually really well taken.
Yeah, and build people up, you know. I was amazed at how well people kind of received, you know, if you just like great job and just be like really positive in a lot of the reinforcement, that stuff's huge. Because if someone's going to be a trainer, they have to feel confident before they can effectively teach. I think that that's mostly that. I don't know if what you think, Melissa, but you know.
Oh, the whole train the trainer is about building up the person's confidence and making sure they know what they're doing. Because how often are, okay, you're trained on a bench. Good. Go work. Go do your job. Oh, here's a student. And then you're like,
And you like
what?
freeze up, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And then you talk to them about other things because you don't really want to train them, right? So you talk to them about anything but what the bench is that you're actually at because I don't know what to do with you. I don't remember theory. That's okay. You don't need to remember, but you know what you're doing at the bench. And so you should be able to share that. You don't want the student to sit there and read procedures the whole time. They should read procedures, but you don't the whole time, you don't want them to read the procedures. You want them to interact. You want them to do the work. You want them to load the instrument. You want them to, if you're doing maintenance, do the maintenance. Like you want them to have a good experience. The better the experience with the students, the more likely they are to accept a job at your institution. And I think
Absolutely.
where we were, I think a third of all the students that rotated through accepted jobs. So assuming there was an open job, a third of students would accept jobs because they had a good experience. And in particular, it was in a couple of lab sections. And they would always get hired into those lab sections. One, because there was space available, but in the other labs, even if there was space available, students weren't going to them because the experience wasn't as positive. Not that it was a bad experience, it's just they were left alone, or they were reading procedures, or they weren't as involved, or the trainers were not as thorough. So they just had a better experience when the trainers were adequately prepared. And so, really making sure that your trainers are prepared gives students a better experience, and then they want to work in your lab, which, let's be honest, we all need people in the labs.
Recruitment is should be huge.
Yes.
It's I know it's on everybody's the top of everybody's list right now. And you know, like money and bonuses only go so far when there's a
Yes.
fixed pool of people that you're pulling from. So these little things, they matter. We're emotional beings, humans are emotional beings, so these things matter.
Absolutely. I mean, I can remember when I was a student, I could have basically worked in this lab section or that lab section, and I had a better experience overall in this lab section. So I wanted to work in this section. And so I took the job in this section, even though both sections had an opening. So it really does make a difference when your trainers are good, because the students remember them.
Yeah, agreed. So we see, and just to touch on too, for we see this model being used in industry in general. So like if you buy a new analyzer, almost certainly they're going to ask you for key operators, or they'll have their lingo, whatever word terminology they want to use. And they're going to train two or three people, soup to nuts, super in depth, right? And so that they can disseminate that training. So, you know, these big corporations are doing it. There's probably something to it. Maybe we can start talking about like maybe obstacles, like what kind of barriers might there be to kind of implementing this well. So I got one of my items that I kind of jot a note down on is like maybe not trusting techs. I know I've seen in the lab where there might be like a content area specialist who then just doesn't trust people to know XYZ, and then they kind of like and I could see why maybe in certain circumstances, but when you stunt the growth, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot, right?
So part of that is you really have to decide how much training is everybody going to get, like at each level. So if you have, like, this is a bench librarian level, this you're like level one, you're just, you're a new tech-ish, new-ish, new hire, those sorts of things. This is what you're going to be trained on. Cool. And then train them on that. And then if they show initiative and they want to grow, then they can grow. But everybody should get trained on like this. This should be the everyone on the same level. And then the next level would be, okay, you're maybe not quite a lead or a senior tech, but you're somewhere in between, maybe level two if your institution has levels. And then that level is where you can give more responsibility, and everybody at that level is trained at this level. And then the same thing with lead and senior techs, then you train everybody to the same level. I think that's really one of the big things, is just not deciding per person, right? I'm not going to train you on this because I don't trust you. Making sure that your trainers know everybody must meet this criteria. And if someone's not meeting the criteria, then that should reflect in their training.
Yeah.
And if it's a person who can't, like if for example, I'm trying to train you on the COAG analyzer, and one of my requirements is you know how to interpret waveforms and you can't, then you should need to get trained on it, take an exam, remediation exam, or not exam, competency, whatever you call it, you know, kind of thing. And then that should be reflected. If you can't completely do your job, why are we going to train you and further and just let you loose? So I think it has to have, I think to get a, to not get around that, but to try to prevent that, it has to be standards.
Yeah. Yep.
These are the
yep.
standards you have to meet at this level.
Yep. Yeah.
Because I know what you're talking about, and it's very frustrating because it does stunt growth, and everyone should be trained at the same level. And then if people want to do more, like if you're level one and you want to do more and you want to take on more responsibility, cool, because that's also going to make you a good candidate if you're trying to get promotion and you're trying to move up. But everyone should do the bare minimum that's required for their job description.
Yeah. And then successfully figuring out what the bare minimum is, the medium.
Correct.
Yeah. And that just kind of goes back to the training structure, right?
Correct.
Having it well structured and organized is critical.
Well, and I think one of the other large barriers that's out there for maybe more smaller rural institutions is that they're going to say, well, that's fine and dandy. You're at a big institution. You have the resources, you have the time, you have the capacity. You can do that more in-depth training. But I think it can be done at any level of institution. You have to have someone, right? Someone who's good at teaching. Every hospital has to have someone who's good at it. And why can't they share that knowledge, work with others? Maybe you don't have someone who's formally trained in, like, I don't know anything about learning styles, and I don't know anything about like objectives and that kind of stuff. Fine. You can still have that trainer who's fantastic sit down with people one-on-one and say, okay, train me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then that's less formal. It's just one-on-one. You sit down. We're going to grow everyone as trainers to increase retention of employees, to increase recruitment of students. And that trainer can sit down and say, okay, how would you train me here? And maybe the trainer doesn't know the exact verbiage that they're trying to educationally teach somebody, but they know, oh, okay, like, you're trying to teach me how to use a hemocytometer. That's fantastic. You're doing a great job loading. Maybe you could have the employee try it this way, or you could also have them do this. So rather than making it really formal, like I've done, you can make it really informal where the trainer, the person who is the trainer, they know and they can give tips and tricks to the individuals that they're working with. And you can really boost and grow your individuals who are going to have to do training that don't have that same level of experience as your really good trainer. So even at the rural level, it's possible. You just need to make the investment in your employees. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, it really does. There will be fruits at the other end,
Yes.
right? So, and it's kind of painful to like take someone off the bench to do this stuff and to lose some tech time to that. But I don't know that there's another way. Like, if we knew like a quick cheat fix, geez, I'd love to title this video like,
Cheat
five
codes.
ways to get easy expert, like you know what I mean? It's just this kind of building expertise in the lab just stems from doing
Takes
all these
time.
things well and building it over
Yeah.
time.
Yep. So you have to
So
get your laboratorians well trained, right? So making sure you have checklists, you have expectations outlined for everyone who you hire. So they come in, they know the expectations. The trainers know the expectations, right? That should be a bare minimum sort of thing. And then once you have that, going further, and once you train somebody and they're operating all on their own, they can run a bench, they run the whole lab, whatever it may be. Once they're fully functional, that's when you give them a little bit of time to get their feet under them. And then you start investing more in them. That's when you try to grow them more. And you're like, okay, well, now that you're done, you've worked on this bench, you're done training, you've worked on this bench for X amount of months or X amount of time. Now I'm going to train you how to train. And it doesn't have, like I think I've said earlier, it doesn't have to be long. Spend some time with that person at the bench, teaching them how to train, and they'll understand. They get the idea. They get the feel of how much information do I give? How much theory do I have to give? How much do I need to know so that I'm sure of my teaching? But really, again, all you're doing is giving them confidence and you're helping them grow. That's really what train the trainer is about.
A lot of it just is that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just giving him confidence. So we have to kind of reflect and say, hey, geez, a lot of us are introverts, right? And so training kind of usually cuts against that, I would think, a lot of times. It's usually not as bad because it's like one-on-one type stuff, but people get kind of like nervous and self-conscious.
Yeah.
So all the little ways that you can build confidence in your employees, that's gonna pay, I keep saying it, huge dividends.
No, but
Cool.
it does. Yeah, so I think the barriers include that lack of trust, but having like strict standards, these are the standards. This is what everyone's going to be trained at this level on, and that's it. You train them. And so I think in part that's management, the lead techs or senior techs, whatever you call them in your institutions, I think it's really their responsibility to determine what are the benchmarks that everyone must meet for training. And then you train them up to that level because, do you want to give supervisory access to this instrument for just your regular laboratory scientists?
Maybe
Maybe
not.
not. Maybe you want that to be your level twos and above. So you have to determine who's getting access to what are the levels are, and then you go from there. And then I think the really big thing is just people not thinking they have the resources or the time. They have the resources, maybe not formal, like I said, but they definitely have them. They have good trainers, and they just need to really give them the time to work with the people who either haven't been as effective training, or maybe who haven't trained at all yet. Before you let them go, before you let them free, maybe you spend some time with them just making sure that they're confident, they know what they're supposed to be doing. And again, that reinforcement, that positive reinforcement is really helpful.
Also, don't be afraid to iterate on whatever training systems you start out with, right? Like, it's always wise to be a bit reflective and like maybe you can tweak checklists and things like that as you come across stuff. There's no need to be rigid.
Well,
But
and maybe your checklists aren't working for you the way you think they are. You could always reach out to another institution and say, hey, what are you doing?
And
And
even
learn.
the industry itself, right? Like, a lot of
Oh,
resources there.
there are what? Facebook groups. I'm sure there's Reddit forums. There's a ton of different places that you can go and just say, our training is suffering. What are you doing? And everybody's, I'm not really on Reddit. I'm on Facebook and stuff. And I see that everyone's really responsive and everyone's sharing. So why not utilize social media? I mean, maybe not posting like, I'm at hospital Joe Schmo and our but utilizing what are you guys doing for training? We need a revamp or we need some help or I'm looking for ideas kind of thing. Just kind of spinning it in a positive light.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think I got everything on my list.
Yeah, I think
That's
we've covered
everything.
everything that we wanted to cover for Train the Trainers.
Yeah. So, for those of you that might have questions or maybe want us to like expand on things, feel free to leave comments and feedback. We might be able to do like a follow-up or something like that. But this is a really, really important topic, right? I mean, especially the more shorthanded you get, the more of a squeeze there is in talent, the more that this stuff I think kind of should come to the forefront. Very, very important. So, I'm glad we put some dedicated some time to it. It's all Melissa's idea. All the good ideas come from Melissa.
Almost. Almost.
Almost.
Right.
Cool. Well,
Well, thanks for listening.
yeah, thanks for your time.